Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Tanamane Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharane Divisesha Sanyavadi Prashkati Desatarane. Now, we won't start speaking immediately about today's continuation of the Bhagavatam, but we'll speak a little bit of review before we chant a few minutes of japa. And the review is the pastimes and plus the principles in our life that we, spiritual principles that we learn from the pastimes that are meant to be applied to our life, but specifically when we chant japa as well. So when when Aristasura was killed, the residents of Vrindavan took Govindam Sharanam Yayu. They took shelter of Govinda so completely. And similarly, what other shelter do we really have in this world? Now, we may not be 100% convinced whether Krishna is going to really take care of us or not, but that is what life is meant to find out. It is meant to develop our faith. This world it is a field. It is a field of activity specifically meant for those sadhakas who have not yet developed their prema bhakti to do what's required to develop it. And so much has to do with faith. You try to trust Krishna when your faith is weak. You can't do it. Try to do some very potent, powerful devotional service when your faith is weak and you can't do it. So it is a gradual process. We step forward to Krishna as our faith increases, and as our faith increases, we step forward to Krishna. And sometimes we have to step forward and then our faith increases, and then it develops. Ultimately, it's not like there's a stage of Shraddha and then there's and then Nishta, and then you give up the Shraddha part and then you move on to the Nishta part. Actually, one can say that faith and prema are the same, but faith is or prema bhakti, love for Krishna, is the full development of faith, because the bhakti lata bija, the seed of devotion, it's shraddha, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says. It is shraddha, it is also taste. But that's what our shraddha is in. It's in that taste, that Krishna conscious taste, and the faith in that taste, that this is the most wonderful thing. And I'm ready to give up everything in the material world that is I'm going to have to give up anyway. Tarappa dhruva martadam. Human life is so valuable because that which will be taken away from us anyway, we will definitely lose it anyway. If we give that which we're going to lose anyway to Krishna, we gain everything. But we have to step forward in this. We have to sometimes it's called the leap of faith, but I prefer to look at it as acting on the faith that we have. Whatever faith we have, we act on it in devotional service. And that is how we find out. Is Krishna. Are his arms very protective, and will he really catch us when we jump off the cliff of our life, when it's time to depart from this world? What will we be jumping into? Well, what we've developed in this life will be tested at that moment. So therefore we should really work hard. Work hard means put into practice whatever gifts of knowledge and faith and realizations and taste we have. We should put it into practice And then it will grow, will flourish and grow. So we learn that from the Brijbasis, how they called out Krishna, Krishna, Govindam Saranam Yoyu. And then Krishna immediately appeared, said, Ma Bhayishta, he didn't say, he ordered, don't be afraid, I am here. And then he chastised the Asatama Manda, the wicked, foolish Aristasura, who was in the shape of religion, but wasn't actually religious, attacking the Lord. That is the opposite of religion. And then we heard the demonic mentality of Kamsa, the scheming, the planning, how to save himself. Ever since man walked on this earth, and even animals, everyone has been trying to save themselves from death. When an animal is attacked, he fights back to save himself from death. One time, when many, many, many years ago, while I was teaching in Gurukula, in the basement of the house where we were living, there was a wood-burning furnace. And naturally, in the winter, mice liked to be there because it was warm. And there was a little baby mouse, and he was so cute. And I picked him up in my hand. And he bit me immediately with his little teeth. It didn't even pierce my skin. He was so weak and so little. But immediately, naturally, just imagine if this huge hand like picked you up right now, you'd probably bite him also. Because you're in someone else's hand at any moment. So everyone tries to protect themselves, even if one's a little mouse, protect themselves from death. And this has been going on since practically the beginning of time. And so far, not one person has succeeded out of the billions and billions and billions. So what is there to lose by taking a step to Krishna? So Kamsa, in his mouse-like way, because after all, ultimately, what did he do? He just tried to bite Krishna in so many different forms. He made this whole scheme, but he was absorbed in Krishna, and this was his great glory, and therefore he's an example of that. He was absorbed in thoughts of Krishna due to his great fear and of the materialistic propensities that every conditioned soul has. Fearing is the deepest. It is the deepest. So we heard about Kamsa, and then Kamsa called for first Keshi and sent Keshi to his death. Then he called the elephant keeper Kuvalaya Pita's Mahout, and ultimately he sent him to his death. And then he called for Chinnora Mustika, Toshala Sala and Kuta, and sent them to their deaths. And then he called for a Kura, because he had made his plan. Kamsa has made his plan, but one part of the plan was missing. The elephant was going to kill Krishna. The wrestlers were going to kill Krishna. And then ultimately, he himself, Kamsa, if all else failed, was ready to kill Krishna. But Krishna had to be brought to Mathura. So how to entice him to come? So the whole plan was there, but then the messenger, Akura, was sent. His most trusted Yadu dynasty member was sent to invite Krishna, to entice him to come on the new chariot to come. So the next thing we hear in the Bhagavatam is not Akura's journey, but from Kamsa's plan making, we learn how important it is to be absorbed in thoughts of Krishna. And what absorbs my mind all day long if I'm not absorbed in thoughts of Krishna? It's just continuously going about something or another, sometimes happy, sometimes sad, sometimes angry, sometimes attacking, sometimes feeling myself victimized, on and on, and just talking to myself all day long in different voices and different forms. And if we just absorb our mind in Krishna, it is such a relief. Because otherwise, it's just me having a conversation with me, basically, which is insanity, basically. And it is not, when one is feeling that one is very insignificant and lowly and fallen and faulty, and one is thinking about that all day long of how bad I am, that is not humility. Humility is touching the fact with my consciousness that I am an insignificant soul and have so many faults, but then immediately turning to Krishna. That is humility. Because humility, dainyo, humility is one of the angas of surrender. And gotrapte varanam tata, or being fully dependent on Krishna as one's maintainer, is the angi, the source. So, akura, when we hear in the Bhagavatam, isn't that it's not that he immediately starts to visit Vrindavan, to deliver the message to Krishna, but the next thing we hear is about Keshi, the Keshi demon who was sent by Kamsa to kill Krishna. And Keshi, he represents, does anyone know it? Keshi represents what Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, that Keshi represents the last demon to be killed by Krishna, although Vyomasura, some say, were killed early and some later. But the last snare of devotional, so-called devotional maya, is Keshi, the last demon, and that is thinking oneself a great devotee or a great acharya and trying to swallow Krishna in that way and crush him. The false ego comes up. This is a great weed of devotional service. Pratishtari yata upasaka gan. It is a weed, the thinking oneself and longing to be recognized for all the great things that I have done. But rather, as Srila Sanatana Goswami explains in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, it's humility that actually has its counterpoint as prema, as love for Krishna. There is no difference. So, absorption, taking shelter of Krishna, and ultimately it is prema bhakti. It is prema bhakti, or that's in the highest form, but just some appreciation or affection for Krishna, some affection for his wonderful activities and how... And every devotee sees how Krishna has protected... Anyone who has done something in Krishna's service sees how Krishna has protected them so many times. So some thanks, some appreciation, some affection, and chanting with that affection, not mechanically, not, oh, I've been told I have to chant my 16 rounds, so therefore now I've finished my 16 rounds and it's all over. No, but chanting Krishna's names with affection. And Krishna can hear the difference so easily. So easily. Just like the mother can hear the difference between the child's cry when the child means it, he really needs his mother, and when the child doesn't really need his mother. There's such a difference in the cry. When the child is sort of just complaining a little bit and wah, 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 then you just hand him something to play with and distract him. But if the child is in some kind of true distress, and it happens, sometimes a child wakes up in a class, you're having a class, and the child wakes up and can't find his mother. And then this cry comes out, and everyone's consciousness immediately must go there because the child really wants his mother. He means it. And everyone can hear the difference. Or when you So Krishna can hear it. Or when you go to Lloyd Bazaar, if any of you go to Lloyd Bazaar, and you hear one of the shopkeepers going, Hari Bol Prabhu, Hari Bol, Hari Krishna. So he's saying Hare Krishna, and you're hearing, give me your money. So if you can hear it, certainly Krishna can hear it. Okay, so, a few minutes of chanting, though. We should chant just for 7 minutes. Just try to chant. Focus your mind. Take shelter of Krishna. And if we have nothing in our... if we can't chant with some affectionate appreciation, or if we can't even be conscious of trying to hear one mantra or one name, at least we should be a little humble and say, be thinking, oh, Krishna, I so much need your help as we're chanting. But not saying that, but let our chanting be infused with that mood. So just chant. Try to settle your mind and just try to hear Krishna's holy names and chant with some affection, some appreciation, taking shelter of Krishna. Try to become absorbed. Just 7 minutes, and then we'll begin. See if you can hear one mantra, and if you can hear one Hare Krishna mantra, I always say you are very fortunate. Begin with the first, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna. We'll stop and start. Om Gyanatamirandasya Janajana Salakaya Chaksu Samilitan Jaina Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manubhistam Stapitam Jaina Bhutale Sayam Rupakadamayam Dadati Sahapandantikam. Yes, attracting the attention of Krishna. Now, Akura had been deputed by Kamsa to quickly, immediately go to Vrindavan and invite the residents of Vrindavan, especially Krishna, to attend the great Dhanurajagya and take part in a wrestling arena as part of the festivities. Now, Akura, he took the chariot and either went home and chanted all night and left the next morning because it was an Ekadasi, or he left immediately, as Kamsa had said, and he left the city of Mathura but waited outside the city until the sun had risen, and then left for Braja. Now, his journey, Akura's journey to Vrindavan, is considered ideal. Interestingly enough, his motive was perfect. Prabhu, could you put the volume down a little? His motive was perfect, but his master was evil. His mission on one level was evil, but on another level, his mission was to bring Krishna to Mathura to kill Kamsa. That was what was in his consciousness. Akura was a great devotee, and we will hear about this. But the essential point here is Akura's example. If we want to go to Vrindavan, if we want to be in the presence of Krishna, Akura's example is perfect. There are 21 verses, or perhaps a little bit less, that describes the way he was thinking as he was journeying. Now, His Holiness Sri Padrata Govinda Maharaj, in his talking in this katha, he calls it Akura Manorata. Manorata means the chariot of the mana, the mind. But also that's the literal meaning, but it also means his aspirations, his desires. So his desire was that which was driving his journey. In the same way that when you're in a chariot or a vehicle, a car, that chariot or vehicle or car, it drives our journey to where we're going. And where are we going in our vehicle? We're going where our desires lead us. So on one hand, the manarat, or the aspirations of Akura, were to see Krishna. And therefore his journey was filled only constantly with thoughts of Krishna. And on the other hand, Kamsa also had a manorata. He had his aspirations. But his aspirations were against Krishna. He wanted to also see Krishna. But upon seeing him, his desire was to kill Krishna. He was based on false ego only. So his aspirations, all his plan making, his aspirations, they were there just as Akura's plan making and aspirations were there. And because Kamsa's aspirations or manorata were against Krishna's desire, all his aspirations were to fail. And because Akura's aspirations were sincere, and this word sincere isn't exactly used in the text, but this is the root of what is actually required, somehow or another, to generate some sincere desire to be with Krishna, to serve Krishna. To be with Krishna means to serve Krishna. So all his aspirations that he will express in his words, his thoughts, as he's driving the chariot of his mind on the chariot that Kamsa had given him, all his aspirations will be fulfilled by the grace of Krishna. Desires in the material world are born of which mode of material nature? Passion, kama. Kama isha, krodha isha, they descend into anger. Rajagunas, they are born out of rajaguna, and therefore the result of materialistic, self-centered, false ego-centered aspirations and desires is distress. But Akura is going to attain the highest happiness because his aspirations are born out of the sincere desire of the soul, his soul, to see Krishna, to serve Krishna. So here we will begin with Akura's, the essence, this is what I wrote, the essence of Akura's journey to Vrindavan is his humble absorption in Krishna's name, form, qualities, and pastimes. There is no way around it. If we wish to get to Vrindavan, we are going to have to become absorbed. In one way or another, we're going to have to become absorbed. Now, Akura's prayers, his words and thoughts, begin in the 38th chapter, and the verses 3 through 6 are his opening thoughts, and they are one of humility. And this is the foundational principle. It is humility. Let's hear what Akura says. I said Akura said, but here it says Akura thought. So who is Akura saying it to? To himself, just like we have our thoughts continuously. Akura had his, and this is what he was thinking. What pious deeds have I done? What severe austerities undergone, what charity given to a worthy recipient, so that today I will see Lord Keshava. In other words, he knows he's going to see Krishna today. He's traveling, and because from Mathura to Vrindavan is not very far. He's going to see Krishna. His heart is alight with this fiery desire. But he's thinking, how is it possible that this has come to me, that on this very day I will see Krishna? I have not qualified. I have not given proper charity. I have not undergone austerities. How has this come to me? Why am I unqualified? Well, since I'm a materialistic person, absorbed simply in selfish sense gratification, I think it is as difficult for me to have gotten this opportunity to see Lord Uttama Sloka, he who is praised with the most glorious verses, as it would be for one born in a Sudra family, a low-born person. How will he ever recite the Vedic mantras? How can I, a materialistic person, in the core of my heart, I am so selfish. How is it possible that on this day I will have the greatest fortune? And that greatest fortune is to be in the presence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. But enough of such thoughts. After all, even a fallen person like me can have the chance to behold the infallible Supreme Lord. Mercy can happen. There is hope, Asha Bandha. There is hope. Because for one of the conditioned souls being swept along in the river of time may sometimes reach the shore. It happens sometimes. And for me, it is going to happen. I will see Krishna on this day. Whoops. Today, all my sinful reactions have been eradicated, and my birth has become worthwhile. And how? Because if one is sinful, one cannot see the Lord. Yesham twantagatam papam jananam punyakarmanam. The pious get the opportunity to perform devotional service. But today, it must be that my sins have been eradicated. Today, my entire birth will reach perfection. It becomes worthwhile. For what? Because I will offer my obeisances to the Supreme Lord's lotus feet, which mystic yogis meditate upon. I will not only meditate upon them in the core of my heart, I will see them right with my eyes. And not only will I see them, I will offer my obeisances to them. And the next set of verses describe his meditation on Krishna's form. So when we see, Prabhupada has explained that when we go into the temple and see the beautiful forms of the deity, we should see them in such a way, so deeply, that the impression enters our consciousness so that all day long we can see that Supreme Lord impressed in our mind and think about him in so many ways, but see his beauty. So therefore, one goes to the temple, one does deity worship every morning for that reason, or one at least looks at a picture of Krishna with intent. Indeed, today King Kamsa has shown me extreme mercy. And this, he thinks, is the greatest irony, because the mercy to see Krishna, the opportunity to see Krishna, is coming at the hands of Kamsa of all people. This is amazing. Well, Krishna's mercy, if he wants to give mercy to us, it can come from any direction, through anyone. So Kamsa, amazingly enough, has shown me extreme mercy. by sending me to see the lotus feet of Lord Hari, who has now appeared in this world. So interestingly enough, Kamsa has the exact opposite intention to benefit Akura. He's thinking that Akura's benefit is going to come when he takes over the world, and he'll give Akura a part of the kingdom perhaps to rule on his behalf. And Akura is thinking, I have no interest in these things, but this order, this ghastly mission is going to bring me in the presence of Krishna. This has been my aspiration for weeks, for months, for years. And now, he's been thinking about this. This will come out later, that I need to see Krishna. I need to see Krishna. This desire is growing in him and growing in him. Tatra loyam api mulam ekalam. It's that greed, the need is growing in him. And now the day has come. And one day, if we follow this path, our day will come too. So Kamsa, of all people, has shown me this mercy. Krishna is so amazing that simply by the effulgence of his toenails, and I will see his toenails, I will bow to his toenails on this very day, and simply by that effulgence, what to speak of his transcendentally wonderful arms and beautiful face and curling black hair and lotus-like eyes, even his toenails, not even his toenails, the tips of his toe, the effulgence of those toenails. By their power, many souls in the past have transcended the insurmountable darkness of material existence and have become freed from it. The insurmountable ocean of material existence, darkness. One cannot see in darkness. One is bewildered in darkness. Darkness is danger. But by the light coming from the effulgence of Krishna's toenail, what to speak of Krishna's transcendental body? See, we see in that, you look at a picture over here, like that one over here of Sisi, beautiful picture of Sisi Radha and Krishna, where the effulgence is coming from their head. But actually, it's not only coming from their heads. It's coming. Krishna's body is emitting this sapphire-like effulgence from his toes, from his knees, from his waist, from his chest to his elbows. Everything is effulgent. And Srimati's effulgence, golden everywhere, spreading gold. And just the glimmer of that, the slightest bit of that, is enough to free one from material existence. What to speak of the person? Persons. Akura continues. These lotus feet. So he's meditating on Krishna's feet here. His thoughts are filled with Krishna's lotus feet. He's thinking that these lotus feet are worshipped by Brahma, Shiva, and all the other demigods, and by the goddess of fortune, and also by the great sages, and the Vaishnavas. And upon those lotus feet, now his consciousness is moving to Vrindavan from the demigods, conscious of the demigods worshipping lotus feet. And the greatest of personalities are worshipping those feet. And what is the Lord's lotus? Where are the Lord's lotus feet? Without shoes, he's stepping upon the earth of Vrindavan and herding cows. Like a village boy herding the cows with his companions, the other village boys, and those feet moving to the highest rasa. And even though he's going to speak here, he's speaking, mentioning those feet are smeared with the kumkum from the gopi's breast. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says this is not appropriate. It's not against his own rasa, his own servitude bhava, because he's just mentioning it and talking about it to himself. He's not trying to relish it, and that would, because that would be against his own mood. He is in a servant mood, but he's thinking about those feet of Krishna's that are so soft and so tender and worshipped by everyone. And today, he is going to see them. Surely, I shall see the face of Lord Mukunda. Since the deer are now walking past me on my right, that is auspicious. So, seeing Krishna, what else is auspicious in this world? Sub, asub, all is asub, Prabhupada says. All is inauspicious in this world because whatever we have, it is gone. We think that if we win the lottery, that's the most auspicious thing that can happen to us. But it all is taken away. This, seeing Krishna's beautiful face, madhuram, madhuram, vadanam, madhuram. His beautiful face is as sweet as honey. And he's seeing the material world. He's interpreting the material world, what's going on in the material world. Just about the point about seeing Krishna. That face, just see this within your own mind's eye. Because that's what he's doing. He's keeping the Lord's face framed by his curly hair, beautified by his attractive cheeks and nose, his smiling glances, and his reddish lotus eyes. His smiling glances, usually glances. See, they don't smile. But Krishna's glance smiles and it makes everyone, it captures everyone. In the 15th chapter of the 10th canto, it describes how the first time the Braja, when Krishna was coming home from the forest after beginning his taking care of the cows, the first time the gopis actually see him, the beginning almost of their purvaraga, their pastimes, they're up on the roof when Krishna's coming home and they're looking at him. And then Krishna looks at them and catches them looking at him. And then they come very, very, very shy and they cover themselves but just glance at him very slightly from the corners of their eyes like that. And then Krishna looks at them and his smiling glance enters, because they see his smiling glance, and his smiling glance enters through their eyes into their heart and plunders their hearts of everything. So Krishna's smiling glance and his reddish lotus eyes are so attractive. His eyebrows are compared to bows, and sometimes his glance is compared to an arrow, and sometimes his nose is compared to an arrow. But so beautiful. This is Krishna. And this is a Kura's meditation as he's going to Vrindavan. If we wish to go to Vrindavan, we have to learn the art of becoming absorbed in thoughts of Krishna, his name, his form. Thakur Haridas would just chant Krishna's name. But we can be absorbed in his form, his qualities, his pastimes, and his service. And his service. So when we're doing service, whether sweeping the floor or whatever, just preaching or distributing books or managing, we think we are doing this for the service of the servants of Krishna. But connect to Krishna with it. So it's a meditation. We want our life to be a meditation. This is what Akura is teaching us. I'm going to see the Supreme Lord Vishnu, the reservoir of all beauty. That means any beauty in this world is just a drop from the reservoir of beauty. Just imagine how beautiful the unlimitedly beautiful is. We can't imagine it, but it's a wonderful meditation. Who, by his own sweet will, has now assumed a human-like form to relieve the earth of her burden? He's come for this. There is no denying that my eyes will achieve the perfection of their existence. And this is the perfection of the existence of the eyes. Krishna Surya Sam. Krishna is compared to light too from the sun. And when without the sun we cannot see, but if with the sun we see so many things other than Krishna, our eyes have not seen anything. This is the mood that the great devotees have. And this is the mood actually that the gopis had too. There's one verse, Akshanvantam Falamidam Naparam Vidama Sakya Pashun. The perfection of the eyes, Sakyam Pashun, to see Krishna with the animals. And Avesh entering the forest of Vrindavan. He's taking care of the cows and he's blowing his flute. He's playing his flute and the most charming melodies are coming out. He's herding the cows and the cowherd boys are singing his glories and he's mocking the ground of Vrindavan with his lotus feet. And seeing this scene, the gopis say, this is the perfection of their eyes. And we should see this. And if we don't have the quality, the qualification yet for this type of meditation, but we should look at the form, the Achamurti, the Vigraha, the deity form, because he's come for this purpose, for us to look at him and become attracted and charmed by his beauty. This is his mercy. So there is thus no denying that my eyes will achieve the perfection of their existence when I see Krishna. Now, more meditation on Krishna's form, his qualities, and his pastimes. He is the witness, because Akura was thinking of the Lord. He wasn't a Braja Bhakta. He was thinking of the Lord as the super soul within everyone's heart. He had heard from Narada Muni about Krishna, and he was always thinking of Krishna. Upadrashta, he is the witness of all material cause and effect. Everything that's going on, the super soul, he witnesses it. And yet, although he knows everything, he sees everything, he's free from false identification with all the events of this world. Ya ikshitaham rahito pyasat, the asat sato, he knows that, he witnesses it, but he's free, he doesn't identify with it. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, he asks the question that if you live in a house, and the house is cold. You may not think that the house is you, but if the house is cold or the house is warm or the house is comfortable or the house is uncomfortable, then one will experience whatever's going on in the house. So therefore Krishna, he's living in the heart of everyone, so he should also be experiencing whatever is going on within the body. So the next part of the verse answers that type of a question by saying, no, by his internal potency, he dispels the darkness of separation and confusion. Swatejasapastatamo bidabram, all the illusion, the illusory experiences, he's in his internal potency always, and nothing from material existence ever touches him. But on the other hand, the individual souls in this world who are manifested here when he glances upon his material creative energy, indirectly, this is an interesting point, the individual souls in this world, that means us, who are manifested here when the Lord glances upon his material creative energy, indirectly perceive him in the activities of their life, their senses and intelligence. So, interesting concept that when we are living in this world, when we're perceiving things with our eyes, when we're using our intelligence to see what's going on beyond our senses, the ability of our senses to perceive, to understand that two and two inference, anuman, to understand what's outside this door, and if I turn left, what's going to happen. This is the function of the intelligence. So how can I perceive Krishna's existence through the existence of my own life force, the prana, and senses and intelligence? And the answer is, well, who is giving me my intelligence? I usually will say, well, I'm so intelligent, and as if I was the one who created my intelligence or lack of intelligence, and sometimes it goes this way and sometimes it goes this way, or my own senses working. Is it me? Am I making my senses work? For me, it seems to be automatic. Hand raise, and it goes up. But soon as Krishna takes the ability away from my hand to raise, it no longer goes up, no matter how hard I try. And if someone is very, very ill, they are sick, and they cannot even move in the slightest, where is their strength? Where is their prana? Where is their life air? So where did it all come from? Where does this ability come from? To see. I see so many people as I look around the room. Where does this ability come? Is it just me who's doing it? The 1-month-year-old baby has it. It's a gift. We can perceive that it's coming from somewhere, someone. It is so complicated how these things work. If you've ever studied the anatomy of the human body and see just something simple like the muscular systems, there's so many muscles that it takes to move one arm, to move, go like this, and then go like this, and then go like this, and go like this. So many muscles pulling this way and that way come into play. By chance, it just sort of happened like that one day? Very difficult to believe, actually. It's so complicated. And it's a gift. And then you think, how is it that by my desire, I'm going to desire right now that my hand lift this little bottle? Now, all I'm doing is desiring it. A little voice inside of me, sort of, in my mind. Now, what's the connection between my mind and the hand that makes the muscles work? What's the connection between? Did I create this connection? Did I make it happen? So that I have these abilities, and the abilities don't come from me, imply that they came from somewhere. And if they came from somewhere, it would be hard to believe it came from chance, because how does order come from chance, from chaos? It just doesn't happen. Should I look at this? So we can see that order comes by the intelligence and power. So in these ways, we can infer that there is someone who is ordering and powerful and giving. In this way, we can indirectly perceive Krishna through all these different activities. All sins are destroyed. We suffer from our sins. And all good fortune is created by the Supreme Lord's qualities, activities, and appearances. And the words that describe these three things, animate, that means give life to, and beautify, and purify the world. On the other hand, words bereft of his glories are like the decorations on a corpse or the pilgrimage place of crows. That same Supreme Lord has descended into the dynasty of the Satvatas, the Yadu dynasty, to delight the exalted demigods. His view is so different from those of the Brijbasis. But yet, it is true. who maintain the principles of religion he has created. That's the demigods do that. So he's come, and he's thinking all the time, I will see this Lord. Look at his qualities. Look at his potency. And residing in Vrindavan, he spreads his fame, which the demigods glorify in song, and which brings auspiciousness to all. And if we connect ourselves to the glories of Krishna, then we too become auspicious. Today, I shall certainly see him, the goal and master of the great souls. Seeing him brings great jubilation to all those who have eyes, for he is the true beauty of the universe. So he's not saying these things to increase our desire to see Krishna, but this is what is going on in his mind due to his desire to see Krishna. Indeed, his personal form is the shelter desired by the goddess of fortune. Now all the dawns of my life have become auspicious. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments that Akura, and again, Akura is our example. Vishwanath explains that Akura, night after night after night after night, stayed up all night long thinking about Krishna, praying that he could see Krishna. And the dawn would rise, the sun would rise, and he did not see Krishna that day. But now, on this day, this dawn has made all the dawns of his life a success, because on this day, his desire to see Krishna will be fulfilled. His intense desire to see Krishna will be fulfilled. Now, he continues. He'll meditate on the Lord's feet, his lotus hand, Krishna's unfailing knowledge, his glance, his embrace, and Krishna's recognizing him, and his loving reciprocation with his devotees. And he will also meditate on Balaram's greeting him at the time of his arrival. His meditations turn to thinking about the future, what will soon happen, very soon. Then I will at once alight, get off my chariot, and I will bow down to the lotus feet of Krishna and Balaram, the supreme personalities of Godhead. Theirs are the same feet that great mystic yogis striving for self-realization bear within their minds. He said this already, but there's no problem. He's feeling, experiencing the taste of Krishna's glories. If there's repetition, it's not his fault. It's not our fault. I will also offer my obeisances to the Lord's cowherd boyfriends, so he doesn't see these activities that are going on in Vrindavan as ordinary. He sees them as the lila, or the dramatic play of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I will offer my obeisances to the Lord's cowherd boyfriends and to all the other residents of Vrindavan, because they are so exalted. They are taking shelter. They are so exalted. He wants to see Krishna once, and they are seeing him every single day. So if I am so fortunate, how fortunate are they? It's incalculable. And when I have fallen at his feet, the Almighty Lord will place his lotus hand upon my head. For those who seek shelter in him because they are greatly disturbed by the powerful serpent of time, that hand removes all fear. And by offering charity to that lotus hand, Purandara and Bali earn the status of Indra, king of heaven. He's glorifying Krishna's hand. And during the pleasure pastimes of the rasa dance, when the Lord wiped away the gopis' perspiration, removed their fatigue, the touch of their faces made that hand as fragrant as a sweet flower. The infallible Lord, he has a doubt, but it's overcome by his understanding here. The infallible Lord will not consider me an enemy, even though Kamsa has sent me here as his messenger. Kamsasya Duta. After all, the omniscient Lord, he knows everything, is the actual knower of the field, the Kshetragya of this material body. So if we come to Krishna somehow or another, if we have some sincerity, Krishna will recognize that. He is called Bhavagrahi Janardana. He sees the essence of the devotee's intention, even though there may be some other complications in there, Krishna sees the good in it all. And with his perfect vision, he witnesses both externally and internally all the endeavors of the conditioned soul's hearts. So he's seeing everything that we do, including the sincerity of every single attempt we make. Krishna sees that. He notices that because he's Ikshati Amalena Chakshusha. He sees all the endeavors. Thus, he will cast his smiling, affectionate glance upon me as I remain fixed with joined palms, fallen in obeisances at his feet. Then all my contamination will at once be dispelled, and I will give up all doubts and feel the most intense bliss. Recognize me as an intimate friend and relative. Krishna will embrace me with his mighty arms, instantly sanctifying my body and diminishing to nil all my material bondage, which is due to fruitive activity. And having been embraced by the all-famous Lord Krishna, I will humbly stand. This is all his aspirations. The aspirations of a pure heart. I will humbly stand before him with bowed head and joined palms, and he will address me, my dear Akura. And at that very moment, upon being noticed by the Lord, my life's purpose will be fulfilled. Tadavayam janma brityu mahiyasa. Indeed, the life of anyone who the Supreme Personality fails to recognize is simply pitiable. Naivadrito dig. Dig means condemned. It is condemned, amusya janmatat. His life is condemned. The Supreme Lord has no favorite, no dear most friend, nor does he consider anyone undesirable, despicable, or fit to be neglected. And he's continuing. So that point is so interesting because Krishna is very, very kind. And what does he see? He doesn't see whatever despicable and terrible qualities that we may have, whatever it is. But if there's a sincere attempt to see him, to serve him, to serve his dear ones, he sees that. And a life that doesn't develop that is a life that's condemned. And then he's meditating on what's going to happen. These are his aspirations. And as Kamsa's aspirations, when none of them were fulfilled, neither Keshi nor the wrestlers nor the elephant nor he himself could kill Krishna, just the opposite will happen to Akura. Every single one of his aspirations will be fulfilled by the grace of Krishna. So Balaram, the foremost of the Yadus, will grasp my, because he's standing before Krishna like this. And Balaram, he's saying, will take my hands while I'm still standing with my head bowed. And after embracing me, he will take me to his house. And there he will honor me with all the items of ritual welcome and inquire for me about how Kamsa has been treating his family members. And then, while all this was going on in his mind, he sees, impressed in the soft dust of Braja, the lotus footprints of Krishna. While the son of Salfalka, traveling on the road, thus meditated deeply on Sri Krishna. He reached Gokul as the sun was beginning to set. In the cowherd pastures, Akura saw the footprints of those feet whose pure dust the rulers of all the planets in the universe hold onto their crowns. Those footprints of the Lord distinguished by such marks as the lotus, the barley corn, and the elephant goad made the ground wonderfully beautiful. Increasingly agitated by ecstasy, not even seeing the form of the Lord yet, just seeing his footprints, his bodily hairs, because his meditation was already so deep, he was already seeing the Lord in his mind and longing for it. So all that he saw was the hints of the Lord's presence, and he became ecstatic. His bodily hairs stood on end because of his pure love, and his eyes filled with tears. Akura jumped down from his chariot and began rolling about among those footprints. He exclaimed, "Oh, this is the dust from my master's feet." Now, after seeing and hearing what Akura had been thinking and seeing how his consciousness was just ready to boil because of his thoughts of Krishna, he was boiling inside. And then when he actually saw the hint of Krishna's presence, his ecstasy overflooded. And now, Srila Sukadeva Goswami is going to give a purport in this, in one verse, a conclusion, what we are supposed to learn. Deham britya ihanarto. Everyone, please. Deham brittam ihanarto. Hitvadamba biyam sucham. Everyone. Sandeshadyo hari linga. Darshana shavanadibi. A very important verse. Deham britya. For those who are in material bodies, ihanarto, there is no greater gain. Hitwa, dumba. Hitwa means giving up. Dumba, pride, biyam, fear, sucham, all lamentation. That Akura, soon as he saw the footprints, he gave up his... How could I roll in the dust of a cowherd boy's footprints? I am a kshatriya. I am his senior. I am his uncle. He gave up that pride. All pride. He gave up fear. What will Kamsa do when he finds out that I've rolled in the dust of the feet of his enemy and Sutsam? And he will kill my family and break my house and I'll be lamenting like anything. No. So for those who are in bodies, that is us. There is nothing better to be gained than giving up all pride, all fear, all lamentation, and doing what Akura did. Sunday said when he got, as soon as he got the instruction from Kamsa, from that moment on, from the exact moment where he knew what he had to do, Yo Hariya Linga Darsana, to the time when he actually saw the lotus footprints of Krishna. From that whole time, he was engaged in Shravanadibhi, hearing about Krishna and the other processes of devotional service. Nothing else filled his consciousness. And therefore, he was ready. That the very goal of life for all embodied beings is this ecstasy which Akura experienced when upon receiving Kamsa's order, he put aside all pride, fear, and lamentation and absorbed himself in seeing, hearing, and describing the things that reminded him of Krishna. This is exactly what happened to Narada Muni. He was meditating in the forest. He was young. He had gotten instructions from the Bhaktivedantas. And as he had meditated so many other times before, he sat down in the forest under a banyan tree, relieved his fatigue by the lake nearby. And he began to meditate on the Lord. But this time, his meditation took a different turn. Instead of thinking of the Lord in the mind, the Lord actually appeared fully in his consciousness. Lord Vishnu manifest perfectly himself within his heart. He had been practicing for so long, and then it happened. Krishna appeared there. And he was so ecstatic. He could not feel the difference between himself or anything. Each of his senses, his eyes, ears, nose, everything was just absorbed fully in thoughts of Krishna. There was such a complete ecstasy. He was just thinking about it, completely absorbed in the thoughts of this all-attractive, beautiful Lord. And then the Lord disappeared from his heart. Narada Muni, a boy, he jumped up. Where is he? Where is he? Like if one had gained the most valuable thing and suddenly it was gone. Where is it? Where is it? His heart felt completely empty now. And then he heard the Lord's very soothing voice and said, Hantansmin janmini kama namam drashto nivarhati. Iva pakwam kashayanam dudarshoham kuyogina. He said, oh my dear one, I regret to tell you that you will never again in this life see me. Those who are apakwa, they are not mature, and have some impurity still in their heart, they could hardly see me. But I have appeared to you this time, this one time, just to increase your longing to always be with me. And by that longing to always be with me, you will purify yourself and you will become with me. So rather than thinking, oh, he only showed himself to me once. You know, why, you know, I was chanting and I was hearing so nicely, and then I can't chant anymore. So rather than thinking, oh, how unfortunate I am, Dhruva thought, Narada Muni thought, I am so fortunate to once have tasted or seen the sweetness of this Lord, and only if I could experience that again, and that desire just grows and grows, and it grew in Narada Muni until the point when he got up, he just wandered all over the world. He went to good places, he went to bad places, and he just chanted and chanted and chanted and sang the glories of the world. He did not care for anything, anyone, any place, any circumstance. He had that taste of the Lord in his heart, and he did not want anything else. He became inflamed with that desire. And by that desire, that focused desire, mixed with his constant chanting, longing to again be with his Lord, every imperfection was removed. And then, when the moment of his death came, immediately he assumed his siddhadeya, his spiritual body, because he had internally cultivated it. He internally had cultivated his relationship with Krishna. He wasn't just sitting by and waiting for some mercy to come from above in that way, but he did his part, and that part was the full engagement in chanting and hearing about Krishna, fully focused, because he had that desire burning within him. So Akura had that desire burning in him, and today was going to be his day. And then, he saw the footprints, but then he saw Krishna and Balaram and the cowherd boys herding the cows in the pasturing ground. Here's the description given by, and we'll end with this description. Here is the description given by Srila Jiva Goswami as to what he saw. First, he, with intense bhakti, saw Krishna manifesting his special power as he was wandering in the place of cows. Akura saw Krishna, who had the complexion of a blossoming blue lotus. He saw him amidst the calves at that place where the cows were milked. The calves were gathered together along with the cows being milked by the cowherd men. And from far off in the distance, he saw their dress. He saw them glance at him, since by their nature, their glances of mercy were attractive to the internal and external senses. Krishna and Balaram's eyes, like bunches of white flowers, were brighter than lightning, but they were also red at the edges, and that manifests during their Kishore ages. With the appearance of unsteadiness in his mind, in order to realize everything, His mind began to get unsteady. But in order to realize everything, he first describes their complexion, then their great beauty, then their arms raised in order to gather the cows. And coming closer, he could see the beauty of all their limbs. He then saw the two boys walking strongly like young elephants. He became stunned by their astonishing sweetness. And then again, he received the glance of their mercy. They were smiling. And then they revealed by their mercy their complete sweetness. And around their necks, they wore short, medium, and long forest garlands. After returning home, they had bathed and put on fresh clothing, and astonished on realizing their sweetness, he then became astonished at their power. Krishna was the chief amongst all beings, and no one was equal to Balaram. Balaram with great strength, and Krishna who killed Kesi. Akura understood clearly that Krishna would kill Kamsa. How could he see these details from such a distance? He could see it because the two boys, they were brilliant. And although night had started to appear, they had shone brightly, dispelling the darkness of the different directions. They're compared to mountains because, compared to other boys their own age, they were bigger, and their chests were broad like mountains, and they had long, thick arms. They were like an emerald and a silver mountain decorated with gold because of their size and their golden ornaments. Their beauty radiated in all directions. Akura became overwhelmed with affection for them. He quickly jumped down from his chariot and fell at the feet of Krishna and Balaram like a rod. The joy of seeing the Supreme Lord flooded Akura's eyes with tears and decorated his limbs with eruptions of ecstasy. He felt such eagerness that he could not speak. He could not say, "I am Akura, I have come to you." He was bewildered. He was stunned. He fell to the ground 3 times, 6 times, 12 times and offered his obeisances in bewilderment again and again. Recognizing Akura, Krishna drew him close with his hand, which bears the sign of the chariot wheel, and then Krishna embraced him. Krishna felt pleased, for he is always kindly disposed to his surrendered devotees. Though Krishna is omniscient and he knows everything, for past times, he heard who this was from his friends, the cowherd boyfriends. They told him, "This is your uncle, Akura." Akura then saw the signs of the Lord on the Lord's hands, and by the touch of his hands, he felt the greatest good fortune. Krishna touched Akura with his hand, marked with the flag, thunderbolt, and lotus. He pulled him towards him and deeply embraced him with affection. With affection he embraced him, rather than greeting an elder properly with obeisances. He disregarded treating him as an elder because he is affectionate to those who have surrendered. He was controlled by Akura's intense bhakti in dasya ras. Akura had all his desires fulfilled. Kamsa had
none. That was a Kura's example. Why don't we just chant japa for 5 minutes, please? Become absorbed. Follow a Kura's example to the best of our ability, somehow or another. Try to absorb yourself in hearing Krishna's holy name, your consciousness in the beauty of Krishna, his kindness to a Kura, hoping that he'll be kind to you. Why not? If we are humble, try your best. Okay, we have a break now, and please be on time. Come, the kirtan begins in a few minutes. So go out and come back refreshed and happy and ready to hear something extraordinarily wonderful. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srila Prabhupada bhaktavinda ki jai. Giriraj Maharaj ki jai.